Bruce, of course, for Truitt and White, the professional builder's choice, and Marvin Windows and Doors. Bruce, on this Sunday morning, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Marty. Doing well, thanks.
Yeah, you know, the bizarro world of baseball after last night. And, you know, I'm sitting here, of course, monitoring the games and say, boy, who's got an earned run average closer to six, Madison Bumgarner or Clayton Kershaw? Who would have thought that?
Yeah, that's kind of the way it's gone for the first week. It was kind of interesting to watch Bumgarner really get kind of solidly lit up by the Padres. I mean, it wasn't like a bunch of titanic home runs, but they hit him hard, and he talked later about, you know, his delivery got flattened out. The pitches were flattening out on him, which is a problem he's had in the past, and he smoothed out. So not a big cause for alarm, I don't think. But, you know, a good healthy wake-up call for him. You know, it's the big leagues, and you got to be on top of it every time out.
Yeah, the hitters will let you know what you have. They had 20 hits last night. Yeah. I think they had like four doubles and 16 singles last night. But, you know, we talked about the Padres, and they're right-handed oriented. We had Craig Elston on with us yesterday, who does their pre and post. And he said, look, this team, if you put it together carefully, you wouldn't put these guys on the team. They're all free swingers. You know,
right-handed hitters. Yeah,
yeah. And Bumgarner had every 1-2, 0-2, 2-2, and he just couldn't put people away. And that was the difference for me last night.
Yeah, that's the kind of lineup that's going to blow hot and cold, I think. And if you got a lefty out there who's struggling a little bit, it can really be rough because it's just one guy after another, Kemp and Upton and Myers and Norris, and they just keep coming at you. But at the same time, you know, like today, Peavy, if he's anywhere near his stuff, I don't think you're going to – it'll be a whole different story if he can keep the ball where he wants to. It'd be a big start for him, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought him up because maybe he gets lost in the shuffle of John Lester and James Shields and – all of a sudden, well, Peavy is back, and you know, people didn't really get that excited with Peavy coming back, and I'm not sure why. Was it maybe the postseason? He had the great game against Washington. Now, this is like a Zito game. They don't get where they get at the end of the postseason without his game against Washington. I firmly believe that. But then he got hit pretty hard the rest of the postseason. But you look, Bruce, you look at what he did from August 13th on. 6-1 and an earned run average in the ones. And, you know, he's a major reason why they got in the playoffs.
No, there's no doubt. What he did in the regular season was huge. I mean, and it was an amazing pickup because there was no real sign that Peavy was anything like he had been. But he showed up here, and he absolutely was. You know, the World Series start was quite not memorable. And people, that's the freshest memory. But he was fantastic. And, you know, he's a great competitor. He's fun to watch out there. The guys love him, and when he's on, he's an absolutely invaluable guy. But you know, right now, I think people are saying, "Well, when the Shields thing didn't happen, they got Peavy done, and we wish it were the other way around." And I think this is why I say he needs to come out today, you know, and look like the Peavy of old, or there'd be a lot more grumbling.
Yeah, and I like the I love the story. You know, that every day we get another story. I like the Peavy back in San Diego. He's a wild man on the mound. Now he's back where he won a Cy Young. He hasn't pitched there in a long time. And he goes against Tyson Ross, who all of a sudden found it in San Diego, and he's one of the toughest pitchers in the league. It's a good story again.
Yeah, and it's a great place to pitch, and Peavy knows that as well as anyone. And it's a perfect spot for him. You know, I think they were smart to put him back to this start. And you know, nice Sunday baseball. There's no reason, you know, why he shouldn't go out there if he's physically right to pitch a good ball game. And yeah, Tyson Ross has really good stuff. You know, the Padres staff is getting increasingly increasingly impressive. You know, up and down, and they're obviously a team that's going to be in this thing.
Yeah, I love the story. I like today's story. I like Peavy. You know, it's the old romantic story of life. You know, you come back to the place that let you go, and, you know, and you want to do well. And baseball has those stories all the time because guys are always moving around.
Yeah, it's not like many years ago trades were fairly dramatic, and returns. The return to the old ball club was extremely dramatic, and there's a lot of, you know, revenge motives and stuff like that. And there's guys move around so much now; it's not quite the same. And I mean, Peavy's been other places, you know, since he left San Diego. But for him, I mean, it's a good spot. It's just a good spot for him to pitch. It's And it's up to him to come through today because they need it.
Yeah, they do. They need six innings out of him. Bullpen's pretty well rested, but they need a strong start to show that he can make his next start, that he's okay to go forward. I think that's the biggest thing for him today is show he's healthy and he can make it through five or six innings. I'd like to see that. Hey, did you take a look at the Salt Lake City-Sacramento game last night?
Well, I only heard that Susac got hurt, which is very disturbing, and then I think Jarrett Parker wound up winning the game.
I
just saw a couple of blips on Twitter this morning.
All right, that's putting it mildly. First of all, Susac, I guess, got hit fingertips. Kieschnick ended up, Roger Kieschnick ended up fouling one off into his hand, went out for x-rays. I have not heard the results this morning, but that was one part of it. But they go 18 innings last night in Sacramento. It's 2-2. Going into the eighth inning, Brett Bochy is on the hill for the Giants, for the Sacramento River Cats, and he ends up giving up three runs in the top of the 18th. So now it's 5-2, right? And now you go to the bottom of the 18th, and now this game is going on forever. And, you know, people called in. I ended the show last night. The game was still going on. Went on for 5 hours, 22 minutes, 9,600 at Raley Field. So then the River Cats load the bases, and Jarrett Parker hits a grand slam.
Jeez.
And Bruce Bochy, his kid is a winner. Brett Bochy wins the game last night. And 18 innings, they end up winning it 6-5 with 3 for Salt Lake in the top and 4 for Sacramento in the bottom. How about that?
That's fabulous. I had a little note the other day. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons to make that drive up there for Giants fans. You know, get a look at some of these guys who are, you know, right on the verge of coming to the Giants. And, you know, including Brett Bochy. And that's got to be one of his most memorable wins, for sure.
Well, I like it.
But what I take out of it the most is if Susac's going to be out a while, I mean, and we know Sanchez is a magnet for pain behind the plate, and it just puts more on Posey to be the catcher, and then heaven help you if something happens to him. So that position is looking a little vulnerable right now.
Well, you look at McGee last night. Bruce, what's your take on McGee? And I know he may be banged up a little bit, and he's another guy coming home. They always say when you come home, all of a sudden you need a secretary to take care of the tickets and everything else. To me, it looks like he's pressing a little bit. What's your take on Casey McGee?
Yeah, I would say so. I think he's pressing on both sides of the field. You know, he's under a lot of pressure. I don't know how much of it he puts on himself, but, you know, replacing Sandoval is a big deal around here, and they haven't even been home yet. He's cut below Sandoval on both sides. He's not a bad third baseman, but he doesn't have that instant quickness, that quick range. Maybe not the, you know, the great side to side range, but just that quickness to make a great play that's coming at him like a bullet on either side, which Sandoval's very good at. And, you know, as a hitter, you're just not going to be, McGee's not going to be Sandoval, just period. He's just not. So.
Yeah.
But he's he gets after it. He's a likable guy. He's not a slug out there. He'll have some moments. And but that was bizarre. I mean, he takes a cut and then just crumples with a knee. It was just very hard to figure. And I haven't heard the results of that one either, but it didn't look very good.
Now, in the spirit of Lon Simmons, he is from Santa Cruz. He could be a slug.
Yes. Well, they're all really slugs down there, in a good way, of course.
Isn't that Lon would say that, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Lon. Yeah, geez, every day we get a little taste of Lon somehow. He's on TV. There's a tribute here, a tribute there, which is just great. You know, I'm sure it'll continue at home.
I haven't asked you about that. We didn't. We weren't on last Sunday, and then yesterday we didn't talk about it. But when did you first meet Lon, and maybe some of your first impressions of Lon?
Well, the first team that I covered was the A's in the early '80s. And I got to know Lon then. You know, I'd been in the Bay Area for quite a while and worked on the Chronicle desk, but and had gone out to some games, but I'd never been in the press box. So I guess it'd be the early '80s. And you know, when he worked with Bill King on the A's broadcasts, my God, those two were absolutely priceless.
Yeah,
I mean,
amazing.
Yeah, and you know, the kind of guy when you travel with, you're on a bus or a flight. In those days, the writers got to do that, which I think is a terrible thing that they don't do that anymore. The players don't want it, and the writers want their miles. But for up to me, I'd be on every flight and every bus because it was invaluable to get to know not just the players but build trust with them, but to get to know the media people better. But Lon Simmons, you know, it's it's 1 a.m. and you're heading to Toronto, and they took it just a horrendous loss, and he'll snap you right out of it and without really trying. I mean, yeah. You just say, how's that iced tea, and then just let him go. You know.
Yeah, it's true. You know, Dwayne Kuiper said it best. And when Lon walked into a room, it wasn't the booming voice, it wasn't the tallness. There was just something about the man that he took over the room, and you just waited to see what he was going to say.
Yeah, he had the gift of an amazing voice, but he didn't you know, overuse it. I mean, my God, if he was imagine Hawk Harrelson with that voice. And he was a guy with a booming voice and was extremely subtle, which is a wonderful combination.
And a humorist. That's what I liked about him. You know, and the other thing about him, he was a damn good announcer. He was a guy who called the play as it happened. He wasn't a recapper. He let you know as the ball was hit, he told you what was going on. And that's not easy.
That's not easy in baseball. And he was a tremendous at it in football as well. And you can hear his voice rising as the play got more dramatic. It might even crack a little bit, but that even made it better, you know. But, I mean, when Lon and Al Michaels did that 1 year with the Giants together, that was truly memorable. The team couldn't have been any worse. It's one of the worst teams they've ever fielded. And they let the listeners know exactly that. It's like, I don't know why anybody's out here watching this game, Al. I really don't. And then management let them go because they were the better entertainment than the game.
Well, when Red Barber said that in 1966, I think, about the Yankees, when they had about 500 people out there, he said, gee, there's nobody here today. That was his last moment of saying anything on a Yankee broadcast. He was gone.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of front offices like that are very sensitive. They want the biggest brand of homer they can get, which is just a disaster for anybody who really knows the game. And we've been extremely lucky out here to have Hank Greenwald, the guys we've got now, and Lon. We had Al Michaels and Russ Hodges. It's just been a steady procession of excellence.
Mm. All right, tomorrow, opening day in San Francisco. Yesterday was the anniversary of the opening of Pac Bell Park. And I talked to John Miller a little bit about that on the talk back yesterday. Who would have thought I'll ask you this. What was your impression of Pac Bell Park that when you first saw it? Well, what now? We know how it's turned out. We know Triples Alley and all the things that have happened here. But when you first saw it, what did you think?
Well, I didn't think left field was going to be any kind of bandbox, which it certainly appeared to be after opening day when Kevin Elster hit three homers for the Dodgers, because the prevailing wind out there is out of the northwest, and it blows across the field, and, you know, hitting something down the right field line is going to be a lot different than down the left field line, and there was very little wind that day. But I also thought right field looked pretty short. I thought a shot into the bay was going to be pretty common. You know, it's not that far down the line, but that's been anything but that. I mean, the splash hits are extremely rare, and even the home runs to right, you know, how often does a right-hand hitter hit one off the opposite field? Almost never. I certainly didn't see that coming, but I didn't see a torrent of home runs coming to left field despite what Elster did.
Yeah, for me, when I first saw it, and of course right field was so unusual, but there were no bleachers. In other words, there's just one level of bleachers. Now, I was so used to seeing two levels that when I looked out, I thought, gee, it looks like a minor league park. You know, it looks like one of those parks or a spring training park, because you didn't have the upper deck and the lower deck and all that. And even today, when I look out there, that to me is still the most unique part of the ballpark.
Well, the right field arcade is a great place to watch the game. There aren't a lot of seats out there, but, you know, right behind you, it's just so easy to get out and just start walking in either direction. I love a park where you can make the circle. You know, you don't get stopped cold at some point and have to backtrack. And then you got the bay behind you. I mean, one of the really striking images to me right off the bat was the sight of a moving mast behind right field. I mean, it's so San Francisco, you know.
Now we have McCovey Cove Dave in the kayak.
Yeah.
We have that.
Yeah, that's a whole phenomenon in itself. Yeah.
All right. Hey, great to talk with you this morning. The road trip ends. Tomorrow is opening day. You must have some nice feelings about opening day, even though it's not the first game of the season. Just that first game at home, I love it. I just think the Giants do it well. It's a celebration. I think everyone should wear tuxedos.
Yeah, I remember my friend Bud Geraci, who's now the sports editor of the San Jose Mercury, sewed up in a tux for a.
Did he?
It was the A's. It was the A's opener. It was in Minnesota. I think he shows up in a tux. I don't think he's worn one since. I have never worn even a suit and tie to opening day. I guess that's on me. That's bad, but I kind of come as I am.
Well, we all do.
Yeah.
But there's a feeling. I don't know. You know. What is bunting? Bunting is, I don't know what it is, but it's all over the place. And there's that moment, it looks like a World Series from 1934.
Which is always great. I mean, who came up with what does that look like? Well, let's call it bunting.
Really? Really? I have no idea. What is it anyway? Well, John Madden, I know, explains it. He does a great job of explaining bunting. All right.
Hey.
I
heard somewhere on opening day in the big leagues they had neon bunting. I forget where, but that's just not the same.
No, you know? No, that's not. And where do you even buy bunting? Where do you even get it?
I know. Yeah, is there a bunting store? I mean, can you drop a bunt when you're in there? I mean,
This is why we have 100,000 people listening this morning. Okay?
This is good radio. Let's get to the bottom of this whole bunting thing.
Well, it is. People are sitting back drinking a cup of coffee and say, he's right. Where do they get bunting? I want some for my house.
Yeah,
look, they sell candlestick seats. Why not buy bunting? An opening day, you put it out on your window. Why not?
All right. Absolutely. I bet people do that.
It's a holiday. And the Giants do well. At least they don't have a night game for opening day. At least they have a day game.
No, the A's pull that stunt every year. Okay, they get a few more fans. That just doesn't cut it for me. It has to be in the daytime.
Yeah.
I wish they'd get over that.
Very special. All right, hey, Bruce, thanks for the chat this morning. We'll talk to you next week. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins of The Chronicle.